Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Great that you stopped by here at The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com, The Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production. And we have Mike Moran out of New Jersey, author of Do It Wrong, Quickly. I like that. MikeMoran.com is his website. And we'll tell you more about Mike and what he's up to. But that's partly what we're talking about today, the book Do It Wrong, Quickly. We are so pleased that you've taken time out of your weekend to be a part of The Advertising Show, and we'll treat you to, here in just a few moments, a Gene Bliss feature of the customer experience, and it's called Chinese Toy Aftermath. It sounds like you need a large monster in there or something like that, but you know what she was talking about, basically all of the lead in some of the toys that we had some problems with. And Patrick Meyer, a little bit later on this hour, the Marketing Insider, value versus price. How important is that, folks? So we appreciate you dropping by today here at The Advertising Show. One of our favorite places, and it continues to be, I know, even though the price seems to keep going up and up and up, Starbucks this past week took another page from the traditional marketing playbook, and they staged a massive product giveaway. This was on this past Tuesday, the 8th. And what folks were invited to do was stop by the local Starbucks between 9 and 9:30 for 8-ounce cups of Pike Place Roast, which is a new blend named after the chain's first location in Seattle. The simultaneous coast-to-coast coffee tasting, 9 to 9:30. East Coast coffee fanatics would stop by their corner Starbucks at noon, of course. Starbucks giving away the 8-ounce Pike Blend Roast as well. Basically, what they said, you know, they just what they did is they took the logic that they had kind of gotten away from at the Starbucks and kind of gone back to the basics. And he's returning, he says, to the very best elements of their heritage and bringing back the simple romance and excitement of coffee. According to Howard Schultz, Pike Place Roast truly represents the best of who we are, showcasing our new quality standards for freshness, freshly roasted, hand-scooped, freshly ground, and brewed with shorter hold times. Not to mention the fact that the folks need to be a little bit better as well, as they indicated by that little interruption in service that one day. So Starbucks, trying to get back to the basics. I'm really amazed, Brad, at really how quickly Starbucks has grown. It really boggles the mind. It's like, wait, you know, maybe is this too fast? So anyway, I feel bad for those other places out there as well, because that's a tough nut to crack, so to speak, when you've got all the competition out there too.
Yeah, I was just going to say rapid growth with any large company, global company like Starbucks is a strain, to say the least.
Potentially
and, you know, we talked
right?
about. We talked about Schultz a few shows ago about how he came clean with some issues that they've been dealing with.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, great idea with product sampling and so forth. I wanted to mention real quickly, I know we need to get to one of our content contributors there, but a Texas woman, a lot of people know about this in Texas, but some of our worldwide audience outside of North America may not know that. Texas woman has called for an investigation and an apology from the Transportation Safety Administration after she was forced to painfully remove her nipple rings, Ray, before a flight from Lubbock to Dallas. Not content to simply be shown the, I don't know, what should we call it, embedded jewelry. TSA officials reportedly made Hamlin, the lady in question here, remove the two pieces of jewelry with a pair of, are you ready for this?
Yes.
Pliers.
Really?
The TSA claims it did no wrong, saying its agents followed procedure. I mentioned this to you, Ray, because I know you have a flight scheduled next week.
could you imagine trying to go through the security checkpoint with something like that? How do you explain that? And first of all, secondly, I'm sure she's not the only one who might be adorned by these things. Which is kind of weird.
I would say let's go with the wand, wouldn't you? Go with the wand.
Yeah.
You don't need to search me.
And the wand, would beep in a rather unusual way. So rings on other parts of the body, I would assume smart people probably do remove them before they get to the airport. and put them in a clear plastic bag, of course, Brad, because that's the way it is nowadays. Yeah. Fly the friendly skies. Boy,
That's what you and I did.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about the airline industry. I mean, what was it, American Airlines canceling up to 1,000 flights? There was an American Airlines this past week that apparently the de-icing procedure didn't work or something like that, and it was a flying ice cube. That's real interesting. What else about the airlines? There was a program on the Today Show earlier this week as well. It talked about don't drink the water on the airplane. The airplanes have a vat of water that they carry on board to do the toilet stuff in the bathrooms and such. And sometimes they start to serve that water toward the end of a flight. So what they're suggesting, it's okay to drink the bottled water at the beginning of the flight, but when you get toward the end of the flight, don't accept a glass of water. Go for the bottled stuff like a Coke or something like that, because some traces of like an E. coli-like bacteria is found sometimes in there. So with that said, wow, buckle up, and we're about to take off here. Kind of, not really. Gene Bliss, the customer experience, isn't that what it's all about? Gee, I wonder why that went away from the airline industry. And this is about the Chinese toy aftermath and what people are doing about it. Let's listen.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome, with your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Did the Chinese toy recalls do anything more than scare parents everywhere? This past holiday, as a consumer, you were left to your own wits and fear about which toys to buy and which to boycott. There wasn't much guidance to help to allay the major fear gripping your decision to buy a Barbie or not. What consumers need is a comprehensive safety checklist. And companies need to step up their communication with consumers about what they're doing. U.S. toy sales fell about 2% in 2007, hit by negative publicity surrounding these massive recalls and a weakening economy, according to market research firm NPD Group. In January 2008, Mattel, which recalled millions of toys last year due to safety concerns and lead paint, said its gross U.S. sales fell 3%. Hasbro, the second largest U.S. toy maker, reported that their operating profit at its North America segment fell 22% during that quarter. Clearly, consumers' fears are not yet allayed. It's time to step up. Ultimately, those that put quality and safety first will succeed for customers in this critical global arena.
This has been your weekly installment of the Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
Gene Bliss, always a pleasure to have you here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Mike Moran is the author of a new book. It's called Do It Wrong Quickly, but there's a lot more to Mike. As a matter of fact, two pages of credentials here, in small type, I might add. Mike is an IBM Distinguished Engineer for OmniFine Search Software, which offers the security, scalability, and extensibility needed for enterprise search solutions. Prior to his position, Mike spent about 8 years in various positions at the IBM customer-facing website, IBM.com, most recently as the manager of IBM.com Web Experience, where he led 65 information architects, web designers, webmasters, programmers, and technical architects, including a few cheerleaders around the world. I just added that. Mike is an expert in search marketing, search technology, publishing, web personalization, and web metrics. And he's a regular speaker here. And, of course, he's an author. And the book is called Do It Wrong Quickly. So we're going to bring Mike on here in just a couple of moments. What do you have there?
Well, I wanted to first also note, as you read Mike's bio there, that both you and I are wearing white shirts, black ties, and a black jacket.
And don't forget the pocket protector, too, okay, with
that's
a few
true.
Pens in there. So
that's true. And by the way, the subtitle of Mike's book, How the Web Changes the Old Marketing Rules, it is a great book, and looking forward to that interview here coming up in just a few minutes.
Sure.
Real quickly, what kind of time do we have, Ray? About a minute?
Not a lot. Go ahead, quickly. Go for it.
Well, Mrs. Butterworth is trying to make
on
a comeback with the new
Geico
campaign.
Commercials? Is that what you're going to talk about? Is that
no,
not a
no?
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know about the Geico, but maybe we're just talking about maybe two different things, but it was just the fact that they're bringing Mrs. Butterworth back after a 10-year hiatus, and the goal is to try to get the name back into the marketplace. And parent company, Pinnacle Foods, is, you know, I guess making their best effort to revive an old brand icon, yeah. I suppose, and both,
and
you know, connect
too,
up with mothers.
Yeah.
And,
She is old. She is old. And she really, this,
yeah.
She is part of a Geico commercial. She's sitting there on the chair and responding to a lady's claim. And she goes, "Oh, they put a logo over my face." it's a great spot. So that's really great that we're bringing Mrs. Butterworth back. Hopefully a low-fat Mrs. Butterworth, because we don't need all those calories. Okay. We've got Mike Moran coming up next here on the Advertising Show. Stay with us. We might serve you breakfast or something.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
Last night, Billy didn't skate once with me, but this should get us together. $40. Great. Now, how about close-ups?
On The Advertising Show, welcome back. It's Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth and a very special guest out of New Jersey. Actually, Mike is traveling this weekend somewhere in California. Mike Moran, the author of Do It Wrong Quickly. Mike, it is such a pleasure to have you here on the show. Welcome.
Oh, hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, well, Ray and I are both great fans of yours, both having seen an article or two in Advertising Age magazine, as well as certainly your book. I encourage all of our listeners to check out Do It Wrong Quickly, and you'll understand why as we proceed with the interview. Mike, what's the central hypothesis of your book?
I think that there's a few different things that I want to make sure that marketers understand, but probably the most important one is that in the old days, marketing was a very high-risk endeavor. It was the kind of thing where you needed to make sure that you were doing things right. So you don't want to be doing it wrong quickly with a TV commercial, because if you are, then you're very likely to be in a situation where you've blown a big chunk of change and you can't do anything about it for months on end because you've done something wrong. And that's where marketers come from. They come from that kind of environment, and so they've been trained to be very risk averse, to check everything, to run everything past a focus group, to make sure there are no showstoppers and all that kind of great stuff that makes sense when you're doing marketing that has long lead times and is very expensive and will put you in big trouble if you do it wrong. The web, on the other hand, doesn't reward that kind of behavior. With the web, the smart thing to do is to be experimental, to try things, to take a shot at something and set up the right feedback loop so that you can tell whether it's working or not. So you can buy an ad with Google this morning, and then if you don't get anybody clicking on it, then this afternoon you can change the wording and try it again. And it didn't cost you a whole lot of money to do that. It didn't cost you a whole lot of time. And you can use that click rate as feedback. And so what you will need to do is to understand some direct marketing principles so that you can see what kind of feedback loops to set up on your website. And then you can use those feedback loops to do more of what's working and less of what's not. And if you can be willing to make mistakes, be willing to do things that are wrong, it's not that I'm telling you to do it wrong, it's that I'm getting you to admit that most of what we do really is wrong. And we have to keep working on it and do it quickly to change it so that we can figure out how to get to a place that really is doing it right.
So marketers traditionally risk averse, I guess, and they're trying to bring that same mental attitude or mindset to the web.
And that makes sense. I mean, marketers have been through loads of different changes, right? I mean, they've been through the changes of television going from three networks to being this incredibly fractured environment with cable. They've watched print magazines go through the same kind of fragmentation. And so they could look at the web as just one more kind of fragmented audience and say, well, you know, we've been through these other ones. We never had to really change the philosophy of what we're doing. All we had to do was change the way we bought our ads, and everything was okay. And the difference with the web is that it's not just changing the way you buy your ads. It's a change from something being a passive medium to an interactive medium. So in the past, you could interrupt people with your message when they were doing something else, but on the web, that doesn't really work. On the web, you have to get people to choose to listen to your message. And so that changes the message in fundamental ways. So now, and you also can find out exactly how many people saw your message, and you can find out whether they bought based on the message. And so that kind of feedback is something that once you start getting it, you feel the need to respond to it by changing what you're doing. And so right now, marketers have to understand that just as important as getting attention is to pay attention, because they have to see what customers are doing so that they can change their messages and optimize it and really make it something that works.
Yeah, this is usually the part of the interview where I ask the author who should be reading your book, but I think it's obvious, or certainly will become apparent to all, that if you're using the web for marketing your products or services, you need to be checking this book out. You say in your preface, Mike, that this book could be really short if people understood two things. Marketing is now a conversation, and feedback from customers help you adjust what you do every day. Why do you think these two, I don't know, what may seem to many common sense understandings of the web seem to be missed by marketers today?
I think part of it is where they've been. I think part of it is that marketers were never in the listening department. Marketers were the people who got to have the outbound messaging, and they were actually able to exert message control so that no one could say anything different from what the company line was. And so they were in charge of speaking. They were never in charge of listening. Listening was for other people. It was for salespeople or the customer service group, or there were other people who were stuck listening to customers. But and so marketers have never had the experience of having to listen. And so now that they're out in an environment in which they put their message out and then customers talk back, that's a very new thing for them. So I think it's very easy for them to miss that this is their job to now be listening. And I think that
Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, and the other thing is the feedback loop. There are some marketers that understand about the feedback loop. So direct marketers who've been the ones stuffing credit card applications in your mailbox or sending you catalogs, they've always lived and died by feedback. So they look at response rates, and so they'll continually tweak their message to try and get 1% higher response coming back. And so they've always lived by feedback. But the vast majority of brand marketers have never had any kind of feedback. I mean, if a nickel rolled under the door because of some commercial they ran, they'd be the last one to know it. There was never any direct correlation between the advertising and being able to sell things. You could look at indirect things, but if things didn't work, you could always blame the salespeople for not knowing what they're doing, because we know the marketing was good. And so there was never any way to be sure of how these things are working. So you didn't have any feedback loops for most kinds of advertising. And it was really only direct marketers that had that. So the reason that they miss these things is because it's never been part of their experience before. And if they've always been successful without having to do these things, it's really natural for them to be suspicious that they suddenly should have to do them now.
Yeah, and of course, if it's sales are great, it's the product or service. If it's not, it's the marketing and advertising. Since marketing is now a conversation, let's get into some of the nuts and bolts here that you describe in your book, Mike. Explain how one can change their strategy from a monologue to a dialogue with their customers.
Well, I think that it's mostly a question of attitude. I think that if you're starting to do things on the web, you can understand that it's more than just your website that you want to be thinking about, and it's more than just putting out flat web pages that you're looking at. You're looking at trying to allow interactivity, so you want to be able to offer the ability to do ratings and reviews. That's a way of listening to customers. If you're, instead of just putting out press releases, you know, put out a blog so that people can comment on what it is that you're saying. If you can set up message boards so that you can help customers if they have problems. And so all these kinds of things are a way of having a public conversation about the ideas that you want to talk about. And it can even go beyond the things that you do. You can be allowing your employees to go out there and do that. It doesn't just have to be the marketing people, the public relations people doing these things. You want your employees to be participating in these online communities, both on your website and in other places where they're talking about your company and your products or your industry. And those are the kinds of things that allow you to get involved, and it allows you to give voice to your customers, and then it puts you in a position of responding to it.
The book is called Do It Wrong Quickly. Mike Moran, our special guest here at the Advertising Show, with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. It's a good thing we've got more time to spend with Mike, and we'll do that in just a moment.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
It's a real thing in the back of your mind.
With us this weekend on The Advertising Show, it's author Mike Moran. Do It Wrong Quickly is the book. Mike, it is a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks a lot. I'm enjoying it, too.
Well, good. You mentioned blogs last segment, and certainly blogs are proving, to become more and more important to marketers today. What do you think is the best way for marketers to utilize blogs? And while we're at it, Mike, what are some of the bigger mistakes you see out there marketers are making when it comes to using blogs to market their brands?
I think that the biggest mistake of all is to ignore blogs. I think that some people find it to be a little disturbing that they put things out and people comment on it, and they'd rather just retreat and not engage. And I think that, that's probably the biggest mistake. Probably the second biggest mistake is to ignore blogs that are being written by other people. I think that the smartest thing to do is to treat bloggers the same way you treat the media. If you look at a company like Netflix, they've made a decision that they don't want to have their own corporate blog, but what they do is they deal with the bloggers that write about them the same way they would deal with reporters. So when they put together their download service, they previewed it for five media outlets, four mainstream media outlets you would know that are household names, and Mike Kalchny, who is the blogger behind Hacking Netflix, who has a million subscribers. And what they told me was that he was the most important person, because if he gave it a good review, a million of their customers might be using it the next day to give it a try. Whereas the mainstream media people that they brought in, they said, those are for our investors. Our customers aren't reading that stuff. Our investors are. And so smart companies are figuring out that bloggers can reach their customers in a way that they can't any other way.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned traditional media. You say in your book that marketers can do so much more online than they can with traditional media if they know how to use it. Let's say someone listening today is stuck in the traditional media arena. What would you advise them to do to begin to include an online marketing effort into their total marketing mix? Where do they start?
Some places you can start are really simple. It's just changing a little bit what you already do. So, for example, if you've been really focused on trying to get mentions in mainstream media, I mean, you have a whole PR team that's focused on counting clicks, and they're doing all that really good stuff. And by the way, there's no reason to stop doing any of that. It works just as well as it ever did. It's still a good idea. But you can add to that by doing things like adding to your press releases the web addresses of pages on your website that talk about the things that are in the press release, or putting in photos, or putting in video, or putting in some of the research that's behind the press release, so that not only will it make a reporter's job easier, but it's also something that a blogger would be more likely to pick up because it has some visual interest to it, and they'd want to put that in their blog. It also becomes search engine fodder, so that your customers, when they're searching for things, would directly find those press releases. And so those are things that if you post them to places like PR Newswire and other web distribution services, then you have an ability to reach a whole audience on the web, whether it's bloggers or whether it's people that are direct to your customer base, that you might not reach through the mainstream media. But you're not doing a whole lot of different stuff than you would do just to do a regular press release.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's important, I guess, for all of us to understand that to improve on the communications between marketers and our customers, that, you know, I guess we need to measure and learn about what they do and the results received through direct one-to-one contact with our customers. Share a little bit, Mike, if you would, on the various ways you mention in your book on how to evaluate this.
I think that the thing you really need to do is to immerse yourself in some direct marketing principles. And that might sound like it's really painful, but the truth is that some of the things are really, really simple. So what you want to do is you want to use, for every marketing tactic you do, you want to measure how many times it's shown. You want to measure whether people actually selected that marketing tactic, and then you want to be able to measure whether they bought from you. And so it's easy to measure whether someone, for example, clicked through on an email that you sent them, or whether they clicked on a banner ad, or they clicked on a search result from your site. So you can measure how many times those things were shown, how many times they clicked through to get to your website. Once they're at your website, you can use web metrics programs, like Google Analytics is a free metrics program, so there's no reason not to be using some kind of metrics program on your website. And you can use those things to measure what we call conversions. And so conversions could be really simple. If you're an e-commerce site and someone buys something, that's a conversion. But if you're an offline marketer and your goal is to try and get somebody to fill out a contact form or call a phone number, you can measure those kinds of conversions as well. Some of them you can measure right online with a web analytics package. Other you have to measure through the same kind of means that you measure the effectiveness of print ads. If somebody has an ad that says, call this number and ask for Alice, well, there's no Alice, right? Alice is only the a code name that gives you the idea of which ad was the one that prompted that. You can do these same kinds of tricks on your website to correlate all of your offline activity of leads coming in with what happened online. And by doing those things, you start to realize what the value is of the website for being able to lead to sales, and then you can put some return on investment on it, and suddenly you now know what you ought to be spending in order to continue that revenue stream.
How smart is that? Our special guest, Mike Moran, author of Do It Wrong Quickly out of New Jersey, here at the Advertising Show, being powered by Shipple.com. Shipple is an incredible platform, a marketing platform, and it has a little thing called Tendency that goes with that that is incredibly good for marketing efforts here. Check it out. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. Ed and his crew do a great job for the Advertising Show. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, we've got more with Mike, and we'll do that in just a moment.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
News Ajax! Boom, boom. Colgate's new Ajax cleans all bathroom surfaces.
Glad that you stopped by The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And our special guest, author of Do It Wrong Quickly, is Mike Moran. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot, Ray.
Yeah, your book is chock full of real-world examples, and you can read about, companies you know by name, and it gives you some history and some things that they did. One in particular that you mentioned in your book, Mike, was an example of Amazon and how they experimented with testing the customer experience to fine-tune their site. Talk a little bit about this wonderful example of how your customers can help you in designing your site's customer experience.
So Amazon, back when they were a really small company that no one had ever heard of, had a big argument about whether they should put the shopping cart on the left side of the page or on the right side of the page. And at a lot of companies, it would have been whoever was the boss would have decided, or they would have said, well, that's a user experience question, so we need to let the designers decide. Or they would have had some way of deciding, or maybe the one who was the most painful about holding on to their opinion would have won. But what Amazon did is they said, let's test it. Let's run it for 1 week on the left side and run it for the next week on the right side, and let's see which one gives us more sales. And what they found is they got 1% more sales on the right side, and it's been there ever since. That's the kind of thing that you can do with your website, too. You can have all these knotty questions that everybody spends time arguing about, and instead of arguing, you can just test it and see what customers do. That was a very simple test, but you can do really complicated tests. There are things like called multivariate testing, where you can test thousands or even millions of possibilities if you have the stomach to create them all. And what happens is that you will find the optimum response rate for your site for whatever the particular combination of content is, and that's really the one that you might want to go with at that point. And there's been companies using those kinds of things that have increased revenue by enormous amounts. I mean, it's typical to see 30% revenue increases when you use these kinds of testing techniques for about 6 to 12 months. And so those are the kinds of things that you can easily do by just letting your customers tell you what's right. It's amazing how brilliant you look if you just do what your customers tell you they want.
Yeah, and listening to your customers is where you're going to get the best advice. You mentioned earlier about direct marketing techniques used on the web, and A-B testing would be another example of how you can use the web in a different way, and or in a similar way, I should say, but be able to get quicker results. Are there any companies, Mike, that come to mind who are, in your way of thinking, set in their old media ways and sinking as a result? And I'm looking for examples here that you can share with our audience. And if you want to name names and we can learn from their mistakes, all the better.
I think that unfortunately there's like so many companies who run their websites this way that it's even pointless to name names. I think if you just surf the web, you've run into them. You've seen these companies. I mean, think about what the average company does when they put together their website. They put this technical tour de force in place where they've got a whole bunch of technical people that are worried about getting this stuff done, and they have all these designers working to make the thing look beautiful. And they work for months and months, and they're exhausted at the end, and they finally fall over the finish line, and they say, the redesign is done. Our website is up. We're finished. And the problem is that's actually the start of the project, because it's the first time that a customer can use your site. It's the first time that you actually find out what they do. It's the first time you actually find out whether things are working. And then that first month to 6 weeks where you can learn immense amounts about which things are working or not working, nobody's paying any attention because they're all sleeping because they're so tired from doing this intense project. And the other thing that's true is that they don't want to find out that it was no good. They don't want to find out that anything was wrong because they've spent all these months telling their executives how this redesign is going to fix all the problems. So instead, what you need to do is to say, whatever we do the first time is wrong. We are sure that there will be lots of problems with it. And so what we're going to do is we're going to spend the first 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, however long it takes, looking at the metrics, seeing what things are working and not working, and making more changes to the site. We're going to constantly change what we're doing. Every time we see something that doesn't look like it's performing the way it should, we're going to change it and change it until we finally find something that works. And that's when the project really starts, when you put that redesign up, not when it ends. And the problem is almost all companies do it that first way, where they look at this as some kind of project that has a beginning, middle, and an end. Yeah. And it's not like printing a catalog. And even if you look at catalog companies, what they do is after they print that catalog, they immediately look at the response rates to figure out how they're going to print the next catalog, month differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what's different about Do It Wrong Quickly, is that you don't have to wait a month for the next catalog. You could change your site tomorrow, even though you put it up today. And so that's what people need to do, is to get into that frame of mind. And there are very few companies that really do that. And so almost all companies are ones that use this old kind of approach. But if you look at companies like Amazon, like eBay, like Google, a lot of these born-on-the-web companies, this is what their secret is. This is why their websites are so easy to use and they work so well and people like them so much. It's because they're constantly looking at the metrics and they're constantly changing their user experience to make something that works.
Unlike your concept of a beginning, middle, and end, or absence of, unfortunately, our interview has a beginning, middle, and end. We are out of time, Mike. But continued success on the book. It's a great book. Do It Wrong Quickly. You got to do that. You got to grab a hold of the book and take a look and check it out as well. Continued success and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth. Got more in just a moment.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
Don't use Comet. Josephine, is there a better cleanser?
Yup. New Super Comet with Chlorinol 3.
Thanks again to Mike Moran, author of Do It Wrong Quickly, our special guest here this weekend on the Advertising Show. Dr. Leo Kiviar out of Stamford, Connecticut, will be with us next week. He is Vice President and Director of Research at PQ Media. So we'll find out more about Dr. Leo and maybe ask him a couple of questions like, you know, my elbow feels a little bit, Well, no personal questions there. So we've got, in just a few moments, Patrick Meyer coming your way here at the Advertising Show. Value versus price. I hate when that question comes up.
Yeah.
It actually shouldn't come up. There's a CNNMoney.com article here. It says, welcome to the outer net. A little-known billboard advertising giant plots its digital future. We've always known there's a digital future for billboards and a future for billboards. It says here, Kevin Riley Jr. chuckled when I described my ineptitude while recently trying to transfer photos onto a digital picture frame, which is supposed to display hundreds of rotating images. Riley is the CEO of Lamar Advertising, whose $3.5 billion market value is more than New York Times company. But his company doesn't get a lot of ink, mostly because it operates in the least sexy quarter of the media, billboards. Well, I don't know about that. Well, its two bigger rivals, Clear Channel and CBS, are each linked to radio empires and tend to dominate big cities. Lamar has stuck to its original business and acquired more than 150,000 static boards. Also puts posters on the sides of buses in the United States, Puerto Rico, and Canada. So, basically, they had a thought a few years ago, unlike other forms of media, the basic business of building walls on stilts and selling ads wasn't under direct threat, but they thought, hey, why not use digital technology and broadband connections and put together a network in which a single ad could be displayed at multiple locations? What a concept. It's basically a veritable jumbotron, like a digital picture frame, and multiple images would be rotated across the screen. So, with that said, look for some new cool stuff as you look at Lamar billboards throughout the country. And congratulations for, at least not if being one of the big guys, you got some big ideas. What a concept there, huh, Brian?
Yeah, you know, when you think about it, out-of-home media or outdoor, it, you know, prior to what you were just describing, it tended to be a medium that didn't deliver anything other than an advertising message. Other media, of course, has entertainment or some type of value that rides along with the advertising message. Outdoor is it's advertising and nothing but. So I think that's smart that digital's moving in that direction.
Absolutely.
Real quickly, I know we need to get to one of our
Patrick,
contributors.
Patrick, we're actually running out of time here. So
well, why don't we go ahead and get to him then?
Okay, let's do Patrick. Value versus price, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Today I want to talk to you about the concept of value versus price. When I used to work at the Gillette company, there was a test done on a new product called Silkians. When we took the price up, market share actually increased. And it taught me a lesson, which is price and value are quite different, and you need to set up the value expectation. So mixing product, marketing, and pricing together is really important. You need to gauge what the value proposition relative to price and what you deliver. Let's talk about the iPhone. When it came out in July, it was priced at $600. They go 3 months, they get to September, and they announce a price cut of $200 off the top item. So they're now making it affordable. Now, they probably skimmed off over $1 billion just on the first set of phones over the 3 month period at the higher price point, but they've now opened the door for the rest to come in over the holidays. Plus, they're coming with other models, just like they did with iPod. But the thing that really intrigues me is that they set a value relationship in the consumer's mind, that the whiz-bang iPhone was worth $600. So now when you spend $200 less at $399, the world is going to feel like they're getting a value because they aspire to own this incredible phone. And now they're getting a deal relative to what the original price point was. So the strategy was a brilliant value and pricing move. So when you think about things going forward, how can you create that better value perception through pricing, through product, and how you communicate that to the consumer?
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer as your Marketing Insider. And remember, the revolution is now. Hey, you want to know more? Go to nowinc.net or send me an email at patrick@nowinc.net.
Special thanks, as always, to Patrick Meyer, our marketing insider here on The Advertising Show. Brad, what were you going to talk about there?
Just real quickly, TiVo and YouTube recently announced an agreement that will offer access to web videos directly on TV via TiVo. So the service will become available later this year for broadband-connected subscribers to TiVo. So it's interesting. Here comes the web on TV.
It had to happen, and that's a good thing, I guess, right? Isn't it exciting, this business we live in? I like that a lot. Mike Moran, great guy, and get the book. It's called Do It Wrong Quickly, and Dr. Leo Kiviarv. Leo, we just say Leo, Vice President and Director of Research at PQ Media, next week here on The Advertising Show. Hope you enjoyed the show today. Tell your friends, too. It's always here at theadvertisingshow.com. The Advertising Show brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.